The Money Show
with Motheo Kgwaripe
on 702. Let's walk the talk.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by APSA. Some stories are just getting started. Your story matters. APSA is a registered FSP. Good evening and happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Money Show as we wrap up the business week on this Friday. My name is Motheo Kgwaripe. We'll start around another U.S. bill looking to prolong and solidify the preferential trade agreement between the U.S. and sub-Saharan African countries. The bill proposes for the Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, to be extended for another 16 years through to 2041 as it reaches its sunset next year in 2025. But there are some, with the extra commitment that is, there will be some tough conditions coming with that. We'll have a discussion with Lumkile Mondi, senior lecturer at Wits Business School, as well as Stavros Nicolaou, the member of South Africa's BRICS Business Council. Then later on The Money Show, the world economy has been quite lethargic, going through geopolitical tensions, higher fuel prices and lower growth and higher prices. Some analysts expect the world economies to go on a super spending spree to achieve a moment where we can see the world economy in proper growth again. Our Money Show explainer tonight, we look at CAPEX super cycles. Daniel Morgan, analyst at 91, joining us for that conversation. Then later on, we cover the markets with Zwela Kimguni, the chief investment officer at Benguela Global Fund Managers. And in our Friday file, if you're into cars, luxury cars, that is, a BMW 7 Series, we look at this particular car and why it's considered the standard when it comes to luxury cars. Warren Tucker, car expert, joins us for that conversation. Then we'll have your brutal biz quiz, of course, and the best bits of The Money Show that came out this week. That's all on the show tonight.
The Money Show with Motheo Kgwaripe
on 702.
702.
There's been some efforts from South Africa's government, whether it was through the Trade Department, whether it was through Foreign Affairs Department, to try and mend the relationship with the U.S. A key to this was, of course, the extension of the AGOA agreement, that preferential agreement, trade agreement that South Africa has with the United States. Other sub-Saharan African countries also have it. To have it extended by 16 years, pushing back the program's expiration from 2025 to 2041. A bill has been placed on the table in the U.S. to see this happen, streamlining the AGOA eligibility review process to ensure any enforcement action is timely, fair and clearly communicated. One of the key points coming out of this bill is also to integrate AGOA with the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. Joining me for discussion is Stavros Nicolaou, the member of the South African BRICS Business Council. Stavros, a lot of efforts being done by government to make sure that this preferential agreement stays between the US and specifically South Africa. What do you make of this new bill and what South Africa faces in terms of making sure we stay within the line of US security concerns?
Good evening to all the listeners. I think this is not a bad way to end the week. As you said, this has been a bit of a sort of Damocles that's been hanging over our heads. Significant efforts, particularly by government, but also by the business community. And the news today, of course, Congress presenting the bill. There's one more step. The Senate presenting the bill to Congress. So Congress still has to approve this. But it's indeed a very positive step because the Congress consideration is a nonpartisan one. And if the Senate's placed it before Congress, it's certainly a very positive development. I think the most manifest issue here is that the U.S. continues to be one of our biggest investors and trading partners. And we've said repeatedly as a business council, and certainly as the business fraternity in South Africa, that we need to operate along the lines of where the country's best interests lie, country's best economic interests. And they lie in the East and the West and in the South as well. So we could not be in a position where sentiment was turning against South Africa, either from the East or the West, And certainly the news today is a very positive, sentimental development. It sends a positive signal to the investor community. And it's just generally, in terms of our positioning, particularly in an election year, I think a very positive development. So that's what I see as the big takeout from today, is that, the endorsement by the Senate sentimentally is a very important development for us.
Stavros, though, that doesn't mean South Africa is off the hook, because the US has been quite concerned about our stance on many issues, the Russia-Ukraine war, and most recently what has happened in Israel what has happened through Israel and Gaza, and South Africa's stance on that. The Foreign Affairs Minister, Naledi Pandor, making efforts to go to Washington to mend the relationship, to say, even though we don't see eye to eye politically, I think it's through a trade, things should still remain the same. Do you think South Africa can say this is in the bag in terms of being on this preferential agreement, AGOA?
Look, I think there were concerns that we might even trip up at this level, at the Senate level. So I think this is a very important development, as I said earlier. We certainly, as a country, need to more closely align our economic policy with our foreign policy. There's no doubt about that. And I think the business community has been saying that for some time. And I think we need to realign our interests along the lines of, where does South Africa get the best economic benefit? And I don't think we can afford, given our economic trajectory right now, we cannot afford as a country to either alienate or distance any particular region or trading bloc. There's benefits to trading with all of these blocs, and I think we've got to manage and balance our economic and foreign policy in such a way that we're able to optimize all the opportunities. You know, India's a very good example of it. I mean, India was buying gas and oil from Russia at a discounted level. We didn't even do that as a country, but yet we incurred the wrath. So there's a lot to be said around how we manage our economic interests and align those to foreign policy.
All right, Lumkile Mondi, also joining us on the line, senior lecturer at Wits Business School. This preferential agreement, Lumkile, a great one for South Africa. A lot of products that we send to one of the world's largest markets. Should we land this through this new bill that's been proposed here by US senators? What are the economic impacts for South Africa?
Thank you so much for having me and to your listeners as well. Mateo, I think it's very, very important. Remember that despite South Africa's challenges, that, you know, the African continent as a whole is doing over $10 billion of business with the US. And therefore, with the integration of the continent through the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, I think this is a huge move by the U.S. ambassador in South Africa, as well as those bipartisan senators who pushed through this bill through the House. Therefore, I think it's welcome. And more importantly also, it does not mean that South Africa's foreign policy should be compromised because of the size of business that we do with various countries. I think the tensions between the economic interest, political interest, will remain. People call it dialectical, given the fact that we don't agree with the approaches, for example, of the US in relation to the question of Palestine. So those questions are real. They're not going to be resolved by trade only. They'll have to be resolved politically. So therefore, I think, yes, we're happy with the trade, but I think that doesn't mean that our political differences with the US are going to be resolved sooner, particularly in relation to the Palestinian question.
And as this conversation is being had, there's been a lot of talk around U.S. businesses wanting more manufacturing to happen on the continent, as, of course, the U.S. tries to move away from its reliance on China. How can we better use policies and maybe actioning on South Africa's side specifically to make sure that we are a manufacturing country and we send finished products there?
Unfortunately, South Africa dropped the ball in the manufacturing sector, particularly in the in its capitalization of both the key state institution Eskom and Transnet by preferring black entrepreneurs and destroying an industrial base, particularly in the greater areas of Ekurhuleni, in Pretoria, areas like Roslyn, and various other places because of PE policies. So therefore, we've got a much smaller economy in South Africa, which has shrunk since 2013. Our manufacturing base has struggled continuously, not being helped by the energy issues. So as long as South Africa's energy policy remains very much confused with load shedding and not known when it will end, and therefore undermining investment opportunities, I think that our ambition of growing our economy and growing manufacturing specifically in partnership with American companies remain a wish at the moment. We have to resolve our energy policy because energy is the key input in the manufacturing process.
All right, that was Lumkile Mondi, Senior Lecturer at Wits Business School. Stavros, I'll let you have the last word. Are you encouraged, just quickly, on the integration of AGOA with the African Continental Free Trade Agreement?
I am indeed, and I say this for two reasons. I think firstly, you know, many commentators have come out and they've said, look, you know, the level of exports from South Africa, the automotive sector, etc., are minuscule in the relative broader picture. But that wasn't the damage that would have been caused. It was the damage in investor confidence when the West starts turning against you. So I think that's the first thing we need to get out the way. I think it's very positive from that perspective. And that perspective feeds into the broader continental opportunity. So what is the Africa Continental Free Trade Area? For me, it represents an opportunity to aggregate volumes on the continent to attract inward manufacturing investment. And the continent and our country has deindustrialized. So this presents an opportunity, I believe, to reindustrialize certainly parts of our economy and also more broadly the rest of the continent. That's the big one that I would see moving forward.
All right. That was Stavros Nicolaou, member of the South African Business, BRICS Business Council, talking about the US legislators who have tabled a bill to prolong the preferential trade agreement, AGOA, for another 16 years through to 2041.
The Money Show will give you all the tools you need to navigate the complicated world of economics and commerce. Even if you're not a numbers person. The Money Show.
With Motheo Kgwaripe.
6 to 8 p.m. Making money makes sense.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
Well, world economies are facing a myriad of challenges, including high inflation, geopolitics, slow growing economies, and instability. This, some analysts expect to result into a great cycle of capital expenditure around the world as many leading economies try to stay afloat. I'm joined now by Daniel Morgan, analyst at 91. Daniel, what would you explain is capital supercycles or CAPEX supercycle?
Hi there. Yes. Well, I mean, I think the context for understanding our analysis here is to think back about how companies have invested, particularly in developed markets over recent decades. So if you think back probably over the last 30 years or so, developed economies have been investing less and less in physical things, in factories, in machinery, in infrastructure. They've been investing more and more in intangible things, in what's called intellectual property. So in primarily software, but, you know, research in areas like healthcare and in the media and all these areas. And it seems to us that we're now coming to the end of this trend. And as we look ahead, we see some really major structural forces which are going to require companies and economies to start investing back into physical assets. So I guess in this CapEx supercycle that we're looking ahead to, we see five major structural forces at play. So I can run you through those quickly, and we can talk about them in more detail. But the five kind of headline areas are: the first is the energy transition. So, you know, clearly a major investment requirement in power generation and electrification across global economies. The second is the remaking of global supply chains. The third is defense spending, we are living in a more dangerous world today than we were, unfortunately. The fourth is really, we call it AI and robotics, but it's about the interaction of technological advances and demographic change. And then the fifth kind of mega trend here is public infrastructure. We need to upgrade our public infrastructure in developed economies and upgrade it in emerging economies. And these five trends, we think, combine to create this CapEx supercycle.
There's been about six significant CapEx cycles since the 1940s. How different is this particular cycle we're about to go into, and what does it mean for investors?
Yes, so I think this cycle is somewhat unique in sort of the combination of these really major structural forces all coming together at the same time. I think in prior cycles, you've maybe had more concentrated reasons for companies to invest, but we see this really broad-based investment requirement around the world. And I think to us, it implies that investors have to look for a broader opportunity set than we've become used to. In this period of investment in intellectual property, the really big opportunities for investors have been in sort of asset-light companies, in companies exposed to the growth of the internet and software and largely the US. And we think that this super cycle sees those investment opportunities broaden out. So it includes all the regions of the global economy, including emerging markets. And it includes some of those areas where investors perhaps haven't made such good returns over recent history, but we think there are big opportunities emerging across the resources sector, the industrial sector, utilities. So, really a much broader opportunity set, we think, to take advantage of this CapEx supercycle.
Daniel Morgan, thank you so much for unpacking that. The analysts at 91, Bloomberg forecasts investment spending will reach between $2 trillion US dollars to about $4.5 trillion US dollars as economies try to get back on their feet after such a tough time after the Russia-Ukraine war.
The Money Show.
The markets.
Marginal day on the markets. The oil share was just up by a measly 9 points. And that's because industrials were down 1.5%. Financial shares are down by close to 3%. While it was mining shares that surged more than 6%. Zwelakhe Mnguni, the Chief Investment Officer at Benguela Global Fund Managers, joins us now. Some commodity prices surging today, and we could definitely see that in the resources index up 6%.
Certainly, Matteo. I think what we are seeing is there is increasing positivity around the momentum in the global economy, particularly in China. And I also think that what we are seeing, particularly on the gold side, we are seeing quite an increase in geopolitical risks in Europe and the Middle East. And that has supported the gold stocks particularly. But certainly, there is a hope that China could get its act together, and then we can start seeing some of the improvements in demand that is needed to support the rest of the world demand. So the word recession has been taken away from the vocabulary globally. And it seems like it's whether we are going to have a soft landing or not.
Then when we look at those banking and insurance stocks, yes, there were some dividends paid, especially locally in terms of the country's banks. But why are we still seeing that high weakness from banks and insurance stocks?
I'll probably say that there's an element of election concerns there in that either the banks actually hold a lot of government bonds in their books and the insurers as well. So if you look at since the beginning of the year, that book has probably gone down by about 6%. So there was a lot of performance and strong performance, particularly up to March, where we saw the banks performing by about 10% year on year. But the big thing is that since then, we've seen weaknesses in our bond market, and that is part of their portfolio. That is affecting them. So it's affecting both the banks and the insurers. In addition, I think the banks are having an added headwind in that the lending to private sector has actually slowed from about 11% last year to around 3% now. So there is a bit of pressure from a generating the same earnings growth momentum from the banking sector.
The rand is volatile, but today down by more than 1% against the dollar at one point. Usually when you see the commodity prices go up like gold and platinum, you will see the rand strengthen at some point. But today, that not happening. Any reason why the dollar was so stronger against the rand today?
Look, I think the fact that the Fed interest rates are potentially, or interest rate cuts are potentially delayed by some timing. So I don't know, it's 3 months. I think what it does support the dollar from a interest rate differential point of view. And I think it does give the emerging market currencies, not only just the rand, it just gives them a bit of a headwind. So we are at a point where there is a bit of uncertainty around the election. Are we going to get a coalition government out of the elections? And you add to that that the interest rate differentials are not going to close down anytime soon. That does support a weaker rand in that sense.
All right, that was Zwelakhe Mnguni, the Chief Investment Officer at Benguela Global Fund Managers, looking at those meager markets that came through today. Was a good day for mining shares, though, which surged more than 6%. The likes of Harmony up more than 10%. Implats was up more than 9.5%. AngloGold, Sibanye, DRD Gold, Goldfields, you get the idea, though, all up more than 7% on the market today.
You're with Motheo Faribe on 702 and Cape Talk.
Welcome back to The Money Show. We had promised you on our Friday file talking about the BMW 7 Series, but we thought we'd do you one better. Now talking about luxury on a budget. Buying a luxury car second hand. What exactly should you be looking out for given the costs of maintaining such beasts? We're joined now by Warren Tucker, motoring enthusiast and expert, to talk to us about this. Warren, car prices have shot through the roof, a lot of them revving up over the year, when interest rates have been going up, of course. They have been elevated for quite some time now, not moving through the shop floors, especially the new cars. But if I want to invest in a luxury car and I want it to be secondhand to save me a buck, what exactly should I be looking at?
Well, Mateo, let's look at this, right? So you'd look around and you'd see, I always get these questions. Hey, listen, I've seen the 650i convertible and it's only 180 grand. It's a 2012 model. It's got a full maintenance history. It looks good. I think I'm going to go for it. And I always say to the guys, okay, that's cool. Go for it. When that car was brand new, it was about 800,000 rand, right? Unfortunately, the parts for the vehicle have not depreciated as quickly as the cost of the vehicle has depreciated. So when you need some bits for the car, when it goes wrong, because it's going to go wrong, you are now out of either a service plan, a motor plan, or a warranty, and you're going to have to pay cash for these things. And the parts notoriously for luxury vehicles, hence the reason why they depreciate as much as they do, are horrendous. I've seen examples where people have bought these secondhand vehicles and, you know, the vehicles, because nothing lasts forever, as we know. So you're going to need maintenance for them. And, you know, you always separate maintenance versus your services, your day-to-day sort of stuff. But the thing's going to need shocks, it's going to need brake discs, it's going to need brake pads, it's going to need tires at some point. And those things come at a cost, with the luxury vehicles, serious cost.
Do we have a Toyota equivalent when it comes to luxury cars, one that you know you can run for a long time without having to swap parts too often?
Well, if my uncle's listening, he would be cheering right now for Lexus. Because Lexus is the brand. They've got that Toyota reliability and that Toyota, you know, build quality, and it's in a luxury brand. You just need to look around and see them on the road. You've got Lexuses from the early 90s that are still riding on the road at the moment that look great, and, you know, they keep going.
Then when we do our research to acquire one of these cars, of course, it could be a German luxury sedan, it could be the Lexus that you've just mentioned now, or anything from the UK. Is there a difference between looking at a luxury SUV or a luxury sedan? Which one would be a budget friendly?
Well, the thing is, I'm sure you know that a lot of the companies own. So, for example, if you buy a Rolls Royce, you effectively underneath the skin, that's a 7 Series BMW. Okay, bar the engine and but your suspension bits and components and that sort of stuff, you're looking sort of at a 7 Series BMW there. If you're buying a Bentley, you've got sort of, because the manufacturers, they take a lot of bits from a lot of companies and then put the cars together, right? And you'd end up in a situation where you'd buy the vehicle and find that specifically, let's say, for example, the brake discs on that Bentley might be something that you find on an Audi or something on a VW, on one of the Q7 luxury vehicles, you understand? So you might get away with that in certain situations, but let's say, for example, you need a headlight, or let's say you need a mirror or a window glass. Those are going to be brand specific and specific to that vehicle. And a lot of the time, you know, the secondhand luxury vehicles are maintained. They're looked after. They're generally bought by people that have money. And when the new model comes out, they'll trade it in and take a secondhand vehicle, sell the secondhand vehicle to the trade and take a new one. So again, it's not a bad proposition, but you need to go into it understanding what you're getting yourself into.
Luxury vehicles are often misleading in that they look really good. So even if you get them second or third hand, you know, outside they look like they should. But what should I be looking out for when I'm test driving one? You know, the kinks that I should be looking for in the armor, so I don't spend money on something that's going to cost me way too much money.
Well, look, I would always start with make sure that the vehicle has a service history of some kind. It needs to have been maintained, okay? As I said earlier, the parts on these vehicles are notoriously expensive. Look at the tires. Make yourself comfortable with the fact that a set of tires for a 20-inch wheel, especially if they're low profiles, it can set you back 20-odd grand, okay? Then there's no way around that. You're going to need tires. So go into the vehicle with your eyes open. Look at the vehicle, right? And look at what the vehicle needs, right? You start with the service history, then check the tires, check the overall condition of the vehicle. I mean, you can see something that's been abused, okay? You would pick it up on the leather, on the driver's seat, and on the steering wheel, and on the pedals. Most of the luxury vehicles are automatic. So, you know, if there's certain things that are not working, for example, in the S-Class Mercedes-Benz, they've got those soft-closed doors. If that system's not working, it's quite expensive to put it right. If the boot lid is not opening and closing on its own, it's quite expensive to put it right. So check that all the systems in the car are working and then go from there. If you are a novice and you are not that tech-savvy or motor vehicle-savvy, book the vehicle for a DEKRA test. It will be the best 1,200 rand you spend. The report they give you will tell you exactly what's going on with the vehicle, and you will go into the vehicle with an informed position to make a decision on buying that vehicle, yes or no.
1,200 is not even a full tank for some of these luxury vehicles. Yes. So looking at the fuel efficiency, I think it's quite crazy that I'm asking about fuel efficiency and we're talking about luxury cars, but we're living in very different times where, you know, money is tight. You'd like something to drive on a Sunday, but you also want to make sure that you don't bleed money as you do that. So some of the most fuel efficient models that are in this particular segment.
Well, most luxury vehicles are V6s or V8s. The words fuel efficiency and luxury kind of don't sit in the same sentence. It's like a guy buying a BMW M4 and complaining that the car's heavy on fuel because it's a performance car. But that being said, right, you would, if you are looking at a luxury vehicle and you are wanting to sort of look at the fuel economy side of it, you know, try and look for the vehicle with the smaller engine then, in that sense. So, for example, you'd have two variants. You might have a V6 or a V8. If you are really doing your fuel economy or your fuel, you're fuel conscious, then go with the smaller engine. Because the smaller engine is going to be a lot lighter than the bigger motor in that sense. But as I say that, also look at what it is that you're purchasing, because it's no use having a tiny engine in a massive body, because that small engine is not going to be able to pull that big body down the road. So if you look at your S-classes, you had the baby, you had the 350, you had the 500, and then you had the big boy, the performance, the S63 AMG. Really, the S63 AMG is a performance luxury car. So it's going to be heavier on fuel, right? The baby or the entry-level one would be the 350, and then the mid-range one would be the 500. So you definitely have to look at those figures and see. What I always say to people is decide up front what it is that you want to buy, okay? Make peace with the fact that there are going to be some things about this car that you're going to, for example, the fuel is going to be a bit horrendous on
things
it.
Things to overlook.
But you're buying the vehicle for the overall driving pleasure of owning this luxury vehicle. So keep looking at the pros on it. You know, if we bought stuff purely because we were sitting there and wondering, oh, wait, I bought this car, the tires are going to cost this, the fuel's going to cost that, I think then, you know, you're going to put yourself off it from the word go.
Yeah, you shouldn't be buying luxury then. But when we look at the insurance of second-hand luxury cars, the special paints, you know, special sort of tires that come with some of these performance cars, how much should we be putting away to make sure that we can sustain the luxury part of the car?
Well, that is a good question. You know, a lot of the time people do, they'll buy the car but not worry about what the insurance cost on that vehicle is. And remember, these vehicles, as I said earlier, their parts are notoriously expensive. And for you to get into a simple Prang and the headlight on the vehicle is 70K, you know, that sort of thing. So what I would do in that situation is obviously look at the vehicle that you want and just give the insurance company a courtesy call and find out what that insurance on that vehicle might cost. Right, you might be surprised that the vehicle insurance comes in cheaper than what you thought, or you might get the shock of your life that, well, the 650i is only 180,000 rand. My installment on the car, if I had to do it higher purchase, is 5,000 rand, but my insurance is 6,000 rand. Right, so you've got to do this. You've got to go into it with some background, and you've got to just arm yourself with all of the knowledge going into that. A lot of the time, one of the pros about looking at an older luxury car is there are enthusiasts out there, and there's a lot of forums online, and they'll spell out for you the pros and the cons of the vehicle. They'll tell you, well, you know what, on the 650, the gearbox is the Achilles heel. You need to make sure that the service at 180,000 kilometers is done. You know, on the S-Class Mercedes-Benz, the valve body on the gearbox goes, or the shocks, the bellows in the shocks are faulty, and you need to change them. So, you know, if you do your research, you definitely would be able to make an informed decision and buy something knowing what you're getting yourself into.
Not all luxury cars have the classic label, so in that it becomes an investment vehicle. So you also have to watch out on the resale value of what you're buying, because you could be buying a luxury car that, you know, doesn't really interest car enthusiasts in the next 3 or 4 years when you want to resell it. So which brands or maybe cars that you know of that you can buy secondhand but still have a good resale value?
Well, the thing is there, right? If you look at the vehicles that are out there at the moment, if you take a Mercedes-Benz from the 90s, okay, and you take, for example, the SL500, those vehicles not so long ago were not worth a lot of money. They were changing hands for under 100,000 rand. Their prices have shot up because they've become scarce and they've become sought after in the market. So their prices have shot up from under 100,000. You'll now part with close to half a million for a 1993, 1994 SL500 with a hardtop. Now, that is just how the motoring game goes. I saw a thing today about a BMW E46 M3 CSL. I remember not so long ago that the dealers couldn't give them away. They were changing hands for 500,000 rand. There's one available currently for 2 million rand, right? And that just speaks to Well, do I look at this vehicle as an investment and hold on to it and maintain the vehicle?
Yeah.
Right? Use the vehicle, but maintain it and hold on to it because it's a time game. And you are correct in what you're saying. Not every luxury vehicle is going to become a classic, right? The Mercedes I'm referring to was featured in the Boys to Men video, Down on a Bended Knee. That was around. Everybody saw those cars up and down. They became scarce now. So now they're worth a lot of money. If you look at the Porsche that was featured in the first Bad Boys movie, that was actually the director's car. They didn't have a car for the movie, so they used the director's vehicle. Those Porsches, not so long ago, changed hands for under R1 million, R2 million. That specific brand or that specific model is worth R8 million today.
Well, that's luxury on a budget. If you want to get a luxury car secondhand, those are the things you need to look out for. Of course, you can still have a little fun on a Sunday morning on that breakfast run. Warren Tucker, car expert, talking to us about that tonight.
702 and K-Talk. Motel is on The Money Show.
It is time for a brutal biz quiz now. So if you've been listening to the show and you want to get the bragging rights on all the information we've shared here on The Money Show, answer this particular question. African Growth and Opportunity Act is better known by which acronym? The African Growth and Opportunity Act is better known by which acronym? If you want to join us and play, call 011-883-0702, 011-883-0702, or in Cape Town, call 021-446-0567, 021-446-0567.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by APSA. Your story should be heard. Your story matters. APSA is a registered FSP.
Welcome back to The Money Show. We're almost out of time. I'm going to make it a rapid, brutal biz quiz today. Give me the answer. African Growth and Opportunity Act is better known by which acronym? We have AK in Centurion. Do you know the answer to that question?
That would be AGOA.
AGOA is, of course, the right answer. U.S. senators introducing a bill to extend the nation's trade program with about 40 sub-Saharan African nations. Do you know this answer, though, AK? ZiG is the new currency or legal tender in which Southern African country? ZiG is the new currency or legal tender in which Southern African country?
Zimbabwe.
That Zimbabwe answer is also correct. It's the latest bid to end the serial slide of the local dollar. I think Zimbabwe's sixth currency since 2008. And then if you can do this one better, name JSE's longest surviving technology company founded by Elliot Eli Salco that went into liquidation this week. The JSE's longest surviving technology company founded by Elliot Eli Salco that went into liquidation this week, AK.
I'm going to guess Elis.
Elis Holdings, I'll give it to you. Elis Holdings is the company earlier this year, Elis Electronics, a long-standing JSE technology company, voluntarily entered business rescue, founded in 1979 by the late Elliot Eli Salco. Let's see if you can do the entire sweep. A WBC is the JSE trading code of which listed second car sales retailer? WBC is the JSE trading code of which listed second car sales retailer that listed on the JSE this week? I'll give you a clue just because you've had all those three right, AK. We Buy Cars is, of course, the correct answer. AK on fire this week. It hasn't missed a show that we've done this week. We Buy Cars had a strong start on the JSE with its share price increasing on its first day of trading. I think I'll close off the brutal biz quiz there. 4 out of 4 must be some sort of record for The Money Show. AK in Centurion going away with the bragging rights tonight.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
After this, you can expect to enjoy the best bits of The Money Show. But for now, it is 7 o'clock. Time for Eyewitness News with Maki Mulapo.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield was brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, bringing you award-winning trade and working capital funding solutions to unlock the full potential of your business story. APSA is a registered FSP.